You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. 7:31, time once again for community forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who is running for the presidential office and seeking your votes. And Dennis, thank you for coming in this morning.
Good morning.
I understand you're probably being run ragged. I understand you're on the radio late last night, but man, you're looking sharp.
Well, it's good to be here, and I always like coming out to Seattle. This area is something that just resonates with who I am, and I'm just grateful to be out here in the Pacific Northwest.
All right. Well, let's start out, I'd like to ask you about Iraq. That's obviously something that's been in the news front page for months now. What's your take on that?
Well, what's happening is that the things that many of us were saying maybe a year and a half ago, expressing skepticism about the administration's claims about the so-called threat that Iraq represented, expressing concern about the nature of the statements that were being made, skepticism that we had some time ago appears to have been well-founded. The skepticism expressed by members of your own delegation, such as Jim McDermott and Jay Inslee, appears to have been well-founded. You know, we see the administration used fear to drum up the basis for a war, cooked the books on intelligence, created a condition which enabled a sharp increase in Pentagon spending, and passed the Patriot Act, all in this climate, which was generated by fear of Iraq and so-called weapons of mass destruction. This whole thing starting to emerge as a colossal fiction, and it has great consequences for this nation.
Obviously, as well as the people of Iraq, where the U.S. is finally acknowledging this week that it does appear to be now a guerrilla war.
Well, it's a guerrilla war, but let's look what's happened. You know, we've lost not only so many of our American men and women, but the countless loss of life on the part of the Iraqi people. I mean, think about this. I mean, not a lot of discussion is occurring about the Iraqi people. But they didn't seek this conflict. They were already suffering under Saddam Hussein, but there was no call for the United States to bomb Iraq and to take the lives of thousands of people and to decimate whatever systems they had there that would support some kind of economic activity, social activity. I mean, we have shredded a social net in Iraq that will take years and years to be able to put together. So this is a tragedy on so many different levels. It is a tragedy for our American democracy, and it is a world humanitarian tragedy that was visited upon a people. My guess is because of the very narrow and selfish aims of a few ideologues who had no concern about anything except probably their own profit. And, you know, whether it's oil or armaments, we have an administration that's up to its ears right now in reality of seeking a hegemony over Iraq's oil fields and also seeking markets for their friends for the purpose of Halliburton, Brown and Root, and other corporations to just make a lot of money. What a mess!
And you've been very consistent on your opposition to the war in Iraq and calling all this into question.
Well, you know, I was pleased to lead the effort in the House of Representatives to challenge this run-up to war. And I could see from the beginning that they didn't have any real case to do this. But, you know, when you look at Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War, it had an account how the day after that terrible tragedy, 9/11, there was a meeting of the National Security Council. And in that meeting, Secretary Rumsfeld said, we ought to use this opportunity to go after Iraq. And now you see in today's headlines that the task force on energy of the vice president was apparently discussing Iraq's oil industry early in 2001. So we're seeing a kind of a perfect political storm come together here. The lust for oil and this desire to control Iraq militarily. What a tragedy for our country. And what we must do now is to free America from this approach of dominance, this curse of control by Pentagon interests who just want to keep building and building and need their budget and need war to do so. This is a moment when we really have a chance to transform our country from one which has been beset by these by this grip of fear and misdirection of priorities to one which can reintegrate with the world community, make our country more secure as a result, and start to address the basic priorities of our own people for jobs, for education, and for health care.
And it seems that the media is starting to lean more in that direction, not very much, let's just say a notch or two. But if you look at the current Democratic Party presidential candidates, I find it unusual that, for instance, Howard Dean is getting a lot of coverage where, if you'd gone 4 years back, I don't think he would have even shown up on the radar yet. In fact, the entire grouping of the current nine, which you are one of, seems to be the ones that get the media attention, seem to be not your regular old war horses that get trotted out every year.
Well, I think what's going to happen in this campaign is that when the American people discover that the treasure of our nation is getting poured into a buildup of the Pentagon, and that buildup came as a result of fear, and when people understand that their health care, the education of their children, veterans benefits, housing, all have been adversely affected by this cycling of this spirit of war, I think the American people are about to say, wait a minute, you know, don't take us down this path anymore. Don't take the treasure of our nation and throw it into this war machine. And my candidacy, frankly, is about challenging the fundamental standing and direction that this government has on matters of war, on matters of violence, on matters of control by corporate interest, and to reassert the primacy of government of the people. And in doing so, focus on our human needs. You know, I have a program, Mike, for universal health care. It's a bill that I've worked on with Jim McDermott and John Conyers of Michigan. Would provide single-payer, universal health care, Medicare for all. I have another bill that would provide for universal pre-kindergarten, ages 3 to 5. We have the money for that. We have to recognize the money can be achieved through a 15% reduction in Pentagon spending. We have the money for universal college for all of our young people by cutting out the Bush tax breaks that were given to the wealthiest Americans. We have the resources to repair our health and education in this country, but we have to have the willingness to do so, and we also have to challenge this fear which causes our priorities to be skewed.
Well, a lot of that skewing comes via our corporate media. If that seems to be a big hurdle right there, the very fact that you're not getting nearly as much coverage as, let's say, Howard Dean seems to be partly due.
Well,
to
here
that.
I am on KEXP. Good morning. and really, you know, I think what happens is that that the American people get their information from a number of sources. And one is from a combined sense of community, if you will, what the psychologist Jung called the collective, unarticulated consciousness. I know it's early in the morning, but, you know, I come from Ohio. It's 3 hours away. So, you know, this idea that we have some shared aspirations which connect us that may not be talked about, but we still have them. And even if it's not recognized in a major dominant culture through being reflected in the media, people still feel this. And that's why our campaign is starting to get some take hold across the country, because it's resonating with the heart of America, with a desire for America to have a more benign expression in the world, with a desire for the American people to take care of our basic needs in this country, jobs and health care and education and retirement security, and to have a vision of America as a place that can represent the practical aspirations of people. So I think whether it's covered on the media or not, you know, years ago there was a poet philosopher who said the revolution will not be televised. And so the evolution of our consciousness in this country, of our awareness, of our hopes, that exists, whether it's being covered or not. And I think that as my campaign continues to emerge, we'll have both we'll have more vocalized support and more coverage from even the corporate media, because there is always room in America for a good story.
Seems like a part of the trick is redefining this whole notion of what really is national security. And I think to the average citizen, like you point out, things like health care and education,
sure,
and
right,
homes really define security, and
right,
not a missile defense system that's costing us billions of dollars that we don't even know if will work.
Well, you know, you really get to, you get to perhaps Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs here. We have some basic needs as human beings in society. And, you know, we have a need for security, but that security is translated into having shelter, place to live, having food, having a chance to be able to grow up in an atmosphere that is without fear, where you can begin to trust things. And actually, this idea of trust versus mistrust is a fundamental principle in a democracy, because you have to be able to trust the external circumstances, the social reality, as having some, you know, something solid, something valid in your own life. And when you start to doubt that, all the familiar anchor points start to fall, and you're left without any direction. And so what we can do in reorganizing our nation and the cause of our nation is to help people trust in the cause of government to address their practical aspirations through creating programs for jobs, such as a public works program that would rebuild our cities, bridges, water systems, sewer systems, seawalls, transportation systems, that would create jobs and restore our manufacturing base of steel, automotive, and aerospace, that would, through universal health care, help not only create more jobs, but also to heal the nation. I mean, this then causes people to trust government again. And right now, the crisis that exists in America is a lack of trust in the federal government, in what it says as a cause for war, in what it would do with respect to the nation's priorities, and how it handles the energy resources of this country. All of these things are starting to shake people's faith and confidence. And what I hope to do as the next president of the United States is repair people's confidence in government as a benign force in the life of the nation, and as a basis for transforming our social and economic conditions.
All right. I know that back in 1999, we had a big event here in Seattle, the WTO ministerial, and I know that you were one of the people there in the streets marching with the labor march.
I marched with the machinists and with the Teamsters and the Turtles, and it was another expression of the power of Seattle to be a catalyst for important themes of national and international social justice. I mean, in seeing the young people of this community who came together in an expression of solidarity with people around the world for social and economic justice, for trade rules that provided for workers' rights and human rights, and that spared the environment and protected the air and water. I mean, Seattle has, I think, a unique energy in all of the United States. I travel all 50 states. I've lived in this general area for a while, and I can tell you there is something special about this community with its connection to nature, with its kind of restless and independent spirit that's out here, that really connects in a sense with something deep in the American psyche and experience. I mean, this country is supposed to be evergreen. The idea of forming a more perfect union. What better place to come with that message than to Seattle, which is always trying to unfold in a kind of a bright promise of what America can be.
So, on your in your platform, you've proposed pulling us out of NAFTA and the WTO.
Oh yes, I'm for trade, but we have to recognize that trade has been managed by multinational corporations without regard to the interests of people in any nation, with only a concern about accelerating profits and creating a more of a gulf in terms of rich and poor in the world. So this maldistribution of wealth, which trade regimes are helping to accelerate, needs to be addressed directly. As President of the United States, my first act in office will be to cancel NAFTA and the WTO and to return to bilateral trade. And that trade, Mike, will be conditioned on workers' rights, on human rights and the environment. And by workers' rights, I mean the right to collective bargaining, the right to strike, the right to join a union, the right to decent wages and benefits, the kind of rights that the hotel and restaurant employees are fighting for right now in this area, and I'll be visiting their picket line today to support them. We need to make sure that our trade rules do not permit a race to the bottom, do not permit playing one country off against another. The United States can help lift the world up through having trade agreements which have as cardinal principles workers' rights, human rights, and the environment. And I intend to lead America in that direction through going back and renegotiating our trade agreements with these conditions put in them. Otherwise, trade becomes a basis for misery, for dislocation, for the closing of industries, for the loss of jobs, for the ruination of community. And trade is not supposed to be about that. It's supposed to be a basis of communication between nations which can lift everyone up.
One of the lines I'd read of your quotes was you were going to transform 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue into
a workers' White House. Well, think about it. Corporations have enormous influence in our government and become a law unto themselves. The concentration of wealth in our society, the ability of energy corporations to be able to basically name their price for energy and get it, when you see what happened with Enron, their ability to manipulate markets with the help of the federal government, the lack of oversight, the lack of regulation, all of these things conspired to defeat the interests of the American people to be able to have fair energy prices. I mean, whether you're talking about California or Oregon or Washington State, all along the West Coast, people are still paying a price for the machinations of Enron and having energy contracts, buying a short-term contract or buying a long, and then not being able to have access to the short-term contracts and then locking into long-term contracts at a higher rate. We see the economies of the West Coast being strangled by the lack of effective counterbalance by the government to these corporate powers. So what I intend to do is to make sure that workers have a voice in the policy of this country, to make sure their rights are held up, to make sure their right to decent wages and benefits becomes sacrosanct, to make sure that their work, if they're a government employee, isn't subject to privatization where profit takes over precedence over public service, to make sure that every person in this country has an equal claim to the attentions of the government. And so the idea of a workers' White House is a celebration of the role of every American in the cause of nationhood, and we must get away from being a country where corporations are simply calling the tune in every area of our national experience. And my independence as a candidate and as an individual will put me in a position not only where I can claim the Democratic nomination on behalf of the broad base of American people, but can take the oath of office and truly be able to represent the shared aspirations of the American people, whether they happen to be incorporated or not.
Well, how about dealing specifically with corporations? And, for instance, there's been a movement on questioning corporate charters, because obviously it seems that so many of our problems, as you just illustrated, come from these corporations that somehow twisted things around so that they have the same rights as citizens.
Well, there are questions about the responsibility of corporations in our society. And these are ultimately moral questions. If you look at some of the papal encyclicals, whether it's Rerum Novarum by Leo XIII or Quadragesimo Anno by Paul VI, you see a real focus on economic and social justice as the basis for economic activity. Corporations with such great power have a responsibility to community, and it would be well if those responsibilities were in effect incarnated in documents that were the cause of that corporation doing business. And if a corporation violated the rights of their shareholders, lied about their income, lied about their practices with respect to how they were spending the dollars of their investors, lied about their books, lied about their conduct in the community, violated air and water pollution laws, basically showed no concern for community, those corporations should be subject to a discipline which would involve revocation of their charter. So I favor federal chartering of corporations as a means of trying to make sure the interests of community are protected. You know, capitalism can present the possibility of being able to further the power of the material world in all of our lives. But without government regulation, without the tempering effect of the collective power of the people, we can see corporations can assume a predatory pose in society and can result in a degradation of the human condition, can result in lack of access to basic necessities in our national experience. And so as President of the United States, I intend to assert the same tempering role of government as Teddy Roosevelt did 100 years ago when he challenged the trusts. I mean, there is a precedent in American history for a president who is willing to say that there is too much concentration of power in too few hands, and in order to protect our democracy and to have a democratizing force on our economy, we need to make sure that government plays its appropriate role as a referee in the economic activity of this country and not simply as a rubber stamp for those narrow interests which seek to concentrate their wealth at the expense of the many.
All right, we have just over 5 minutes left. I wanted to hit some of the items on your 10-point vision. Patriot Act, you're proposing to put that in the shredder?
Think about this. How could something be called the Patriot Act when it put the Bill of Rights in the shredder? Now, I took to the floor of the House the day that, the evening that bill was brought in, and it's an interesting story, Mike, how Congress debated the nuances of a National Security Act which could somehow hope to secure the country better. We spent over a dozen hours in committee discussing this. And then at the last minute, the administration swapped the bill out that we were talking about and came up with, voila, the Patriot Act, this bill that most members voted on without having seen. And I have this basic approach towards business in Washington. What you don't see, don't vote for. And yet members voted for the Patriot Act. Many of them had not seen this large bill, which it turned out challenged numerous provisions of our constitutional freedoms, whether it's the right to assemble, the right to free speech, the ability to have the protections of the Constitution if you're accused of a crime, the right to be free in our persons from search and seizure. I mean, all of these things were under attack in the Patriot Act. So not only did I speak against it and organize other members of Congress against it on the floor that evening, but also have gone across the country in challenging the very basis of an act which would, in a sense, concede to those who did not like our system of government that, well, we'll change it. We'll change it and become less democratic. And so I believe, as president, I would have the Justice Department file suit to nullify those sections of the Patriot Act which are direct violations of our Bill of Rights. I would ask the Justice Department to set aside enforcement while that lawsuit was going on. I would seek to have Congress overturn the provisions of the Patriot Act or repeal the entire act, calling it a Patriot Act. You know, the real patriotism in this society is challenging the government when it loses its way, is challenging the government when it forgets the very basis of its founding. And that's my approach and what I hope to do as an ex-president of the United States, not only overturn the Patriot Act, but to reassert the primacy of the Bill of Rights, how that Bill of Rights enabled this country to be able to declare before the whole world that our rights in a democratic society will never be trampled on. And we must assert them, and we have an obligation to assert them at a time of peril when it would seem that the country is threatened. But the real threat, it turns out, Mike, the real threat has been from within.
I think a lot of people are recognizing that now. One last one I definitely want to touch on, women's right to choose.
Well, I support a woman's right to choose, and I think that it relates directly to a woman's freedom in our society and her equality in society. You know, there was a time when I had my own misgivings about this, but through the help of women in my life, as I think some of us have the chance to be able to get advice as to how critical this issue is for women. And in the last few votes in the House of Representatives, I've had the opportunity to stand up on the floor of the Congress and state how important it is that we work to make abortions less necessary through sex education and birth control, how we need to help life unfold to its fullest through prenatal care, postnatal care, child care, universal health care, and a living wage, but how we must do all of that within a context of protecting Roe v. Wade and providing women have that constitutionally protected right to choose. I think as President of the United States, I can, through my experience and understanding the heart of people on both sides of this question, help to bring about a healing, help to approach this serious issue in a non-judgmental way that removes the kind of tremendous angst that people feel, and enable this country to heal itself on this issue by working to make abortions less necessary and at the same time protecting a woman's right to choose.
All right, and finally, I see that I read that you are supportive of same-sex marriages.
I don't think the government should do anything but see that the rights of people in a society be afforded to everyone, regardless of race, color, creed, or sexual orientation. I mean, why should a gay be denied the opportunity for a fullest expression of personhood? And in a society, though, rights ought to be accorded to every person. And so I feel very strongly that the unfolding of America's potential involves our willingness to accord the fullest expression of civil rights to all of our citizens. And so, of course, I support same-sex marriage, and I think that while each religion has the right to be able to decide, whatever unions they choose to bless, our nation, as a civil society, ought to accord the fullest expressions of rights to all people without qualification. And I might add, this isn't an issue we can leave from state to state. This is a question about who we are as a nation. It's a question, you know, why should people have to move from state to state and to find a place to be? Let people be who they are, let people love who they love, and let us as a nation love ourselves.
All right, we're talking this morning with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, and you are going to be doing a workshop, is that correct? Am I wording that right, at this morning at 9 o'clock from 9 to 11?
Yes, I'll be meeting with supporters, and this is going to be a busy day here in the Puget Sound area, and I'm also asking, if I may, of people, if they want more information about the campaign, to go to kucinich.us. That name is spelled K-U-C-I-N-I-C-H. Kucinich. Now, I know that some people have trouble pronouncing it. I want to reassure you that it took me years to learn how to pronounce it. But once I got it, I had it down. And I want to thank all of you. And Mike, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to be on KEXP. We've had a very powerful response from the state of Washington, from the Seattle area. And I'm looking forward to our campaign in the state. And I'm confident that the message that I have of peace and prosperity, a message of reclaiming who we are as a nation, a message of lifting this country up, of inspiration, a message that deals with heart and vision, is a message that will resonate with this area, which has so much to offer people who live here and still needs the attentions of a federal government which understands the potential that's here, that needs just a little bit of help to keep unfolding.
All right. So if people are interested in supporting Dennis, you can attend that workshop today. It's at University Temple United Methodist Church, which is in the U District. And I believe 1415 43rd Avenue, it's right behind the post office. It's the same place that you all saw Scott Ritter speak in. So it goes from 9 to 11, and if you get there early enough, you'll find parking. Starting at 9.
Thank you, Mike. And you know, you mentioned Scott Ritter. Here's somebody who was smeared for challenging this administration's pretext towards war. And, you know, when you think about it, I mean, for a while, everyone who stood up and spoke out was smeared. Jim McDermott was smeared. And you know, the people should know that in moments of crisis, the real patriots are those who are willing to stand up and speak out without regard to the consequences of the moment.
All right. Dennis, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.